I'm Bruce Selry. This is Moolah La, Money Made Simple. Today's show is all about the best of interviews of financial wellness. This is a topic we revisit over and over because it's so, so critical. One question is, what's enough? What's enough? I have this question when it comes to brownies, I think never enough. But when it comes to money, I think it's a really, really important question that people need to ask. Mike Braga is a licensed insolvency trustee. He's the host of the Money Matters show, and he has some thoughts on how to answer this question. And money coach Shalisha Harris is going to talk about her platform called In Charge and her five key pillars for personal finance that she believes will help you build a strong financial foundation. Then we've highlighted a bunch of budgeting apps on the show in the past. One is called Capital, and it has a feature that helps couples manage their money together. Its founders, a couple, are Catherine Salisbury and George Friedman. They're going to be here to talk about what they think makes this app unique. Plus, what if you're single? It's different. There are just so many things that are different if you're so solo. Some things are simpler. Some things are much more complicated, easier, harder, certainly different. We're going to talk about that with Julie Shipley Strickland. She has co-authored a book called The Canadian's Guide to Personal Finance for Singles. This is Moolah La, Money Made Simple, brought to you in part by Credit Canada, first and longest standing nonprofit credit counseling agency in the country. Let's get started. Enough. What is enough? Perhaps if we were able to get really, really clear on what is enough for ourselves, it might affect how we behave when it comes to money. Mike Braga is a licensed insolvency trustee with BDO Canada. He is also the host of the Rogers TV show Money Matters. And he joins us now to talk about bastante, which is the Portuguese word for enough. Mike, I love that we're talking about enough. Why are we talking about it in Portuguese?
Well, because it's one of those words in Portuguese that has many meanings. And so, you know, and similar in English, but it's just something gets lost in translation. And so, you know, you use the word basta, which is an abbreviation to mean, you know, when you're fed up, you know, and you've had enough. Or, you know, bastante means, do you have enough in terms of, do you have enough things or do you have enough food on the table? So there's a lot of different meanings to this word. And as I reflect on the work that I do with individuals, you know, when I'm doing financial counseling, that's a concept that we really don't speak a whole lot about. You know, we talk about what a dream home looks like, but do we ever ask, what does enough house look like for us right now? And why aren't we looking for that? And similarly, we have plans in terms of retirement, and we have an entire industry focused on retirement that is so focused on, you know, saving certain percentages. Do we stop to think, what does enough of a retirement look like for us? What does our lifestyle look like? And why isn't that driving the conversation in terms of how much we need to save as opposed to percentages? And so as I was reflecting on my personal journey over the last couple of years, this word just kept circling back and coming up. And I thought it was important to start having that conversation.
Do you have a connection to Portugal?
So my parents emigrated from Portugal. I'm first generation Canadian. Okay. And so, you know, my first language at home was Portuguese. And so it wasn't until I started kindergarten that I started the English language. So I find that, you know, when I'm gripping for words or concepts, I revert to Portuguese. And this, you know, this word keeps popping up in my mind a lot when counseling.
You talked about your personal journey. One thing you've been quite public about is the weight loss that you pursued and were successful in over the course of that time. We're going to talk about finances, but I think there's a powerful metaphor to think about your insight around enough when it comes to health.
Absolutely. And so, you know, the beginning of the pandemic, I really started seeing that things were getting out of control. And my health for many years had been out of control. And I got up to the point where, you know, my biggest weight, I was at about 270, just a little over pounds. And so pandemic hits, and all of a sudden, everything in my life started turning upside down. You couldn't go to the office, you're isolated. And again, it's one of those words where I've just had enough, or it was bashta, right? Like I just had enough and I needed to do something. And I've tried to do things in the past in order to lose weight and all those kind of stuff. And I'm thinking, well, hang on a second, I need to revert to what I know. And I need to go back to the lessons that I've learned over the last 21 years, all of these financial concepts. And I need to start thinking if there's a way that I can apply it to my wellness journey. And sure enough, all of the words and all of the tips and tricks and the little sayings that I give to individuals, you know, just came back and cycled in my head. And, you know, we're 2 years later, 90 pounds lighter. And, you know, it just seemed to work. And so, you know, finances and health and wellness and all of those things that get associated with it, there is a connection. And I just started, as I was reflecting on it, just seeing more and more of it.
Mm. You and I both spend a lot of our time, most of our work time, dealing with and engaging with and trying to help people with debt that they can't manage. And mm-hmm. there are an infinite number of reasons why that is. It is not everybody going to the mall and overspending on a credit card. There are root causes like mental health. There's divorce. There's job loss. There's all those sorts of things. Give me a flavor, though, for how you would have the conversation about enough for someone who is dealing with debt that they cannot manage.
Well, the first time that somebody speaks to me, it's because they've reached a critical point in their path where they have had enough. You know, they're fed up. They're dodging their mailbox. They're not answering their phone calls because they're afraid that the collectors are going to be hounding them. They're not, you know, they're keeping things from their spouses. So that's the first time that really it reaches that threshold where they're fed up and they've had enough. And then they come to me and they think, okay, what can I do? And from that perspective and getting people back on track, it is really about how much is enough. And from a financial planning perspective, you know, we talk about budgeting and it becomes, you know, there are really only three things you control: how much you earn, what you're saving, and what you're spending. Mm-hmm. And you have to balance each of those categories and make sure you have enough in each of those categories. You know, if you're on a fixed income, your spending needs to be less. And so, but you also need to make sure that your basic necessities are being met. So how do we do that? How do we supplement that? And how do we make sure that you do have enough? But again, it's coming back to the question, what does enough look like? And I talked about housing as a prime example. For many of my clients, again, as I suggested to you, there's this dream about what the dream house looks like. And they go out into the housing market and that's what they look for. They look for the granite countertops. They look for, you know, the hardwood floors. They look for the multiple bedrooms, you know, to make sure, because, you know, there's going to be company that's going to come. So you need to have the spare bedroom. And so we're doing all of that. And then I stop and I say, okay, so now that we know what, you know, your dream house looks like, what does enough house look like for the way that you're living currently? And can we build to that dream house? Because what you'll see is there's a shift, you know, and it's oftentimes a significant shift in terms of what is enough and that dream. And it doesn't necessarily mean you're not going to achieve the dream, but it means that, you know, you have to be cognizant of the resources that you have.
One of the other dynamics that a lot of people who are dealing with debt have to manage is a scarcity mindset in which, for whatever reason, they're just so concerned about not having enough groceries, not having enough things around. And so they overbuy or overconsume as a way mm-hmm. to tamp that down.
Absolutely.
That would seem to be a real, a very relevant and practical conversation to have with those who overshop.
Oh, absolutely. And again, you know, we think of overshopping as it's a lack of self-control, but it comes back to, as you said, it's the scarcity mindset. And when we hear that Canada is one of the leaders among, you know, industrial nations in food waste, you can see that. And it's because we're afraid that, oh my God, you know, you're living paycheck to paycheck, you have money right now, you need to stock up on your groceries right now, because you don't know what's going to happen 2 weeks from now. We have to shift that mindset and we have to start thinking about budgeting very differently and make sure that we have, you know, we convert to more of that abundance mindset and think, you know, if we know that we have enough income and we've done our budget, if we just stick to that budget, we know we're going to be fine. And that's the shift that I try to have with my clients. It's having that game plan. Now, budget has become a four-letter word in our culture. And mm-hmm. it means, you know, it's the same with diet, right? Mm-hmm. You hear budget, you hear diet, and you think, oh my God, it's completely restrictive. And, you know, to be honest with you, Bruce, if I shared with you my budget and I shared it with the audience members, there's going to be things on my budget that they're going to say, well, hang on a second, you spend that on that category and one of them is travel. And the reality is, yes, that's important to me. And so I make sure that I'm allotting myself dollars, you know, in my budget to make sure that that's covered. But I also know that I cannot be spending in that way in every expense category. So where is my trades off? Mm. You know, what are my priorities? How do I make sure I have enough in each of my other categories, but still allow myself enough to travel?
The other tough conversation to have is that it is not enough in terms of income. Because mm-hmm. for many people trying to tackle debt, what's required, there's only so far they can go on an expense reduction.
Correct.
And they need to go out and get a second job to mm-hmm. stave off crisis. That's Correct. Not an easy conversation to have either.
It is absolutely not an easy conversation. And you need to think about what the trade-offs are. So getting that second job or increasing that income and pulling that lever certainly is going to help. But I keep telling my clients, and similarly, you know, from a fitness perspective, you can't out-train a poor diet, and you can't out-earn a poor budget. You know, it's very similar, right? And so we need to keep that in mind. And so in those situations, if you have a lot of debt and you're not sure that, you know, you're going to be able to manage it, and you know, you can't easily get that second job or it's going to cause strain on your family, it's time to seek professional advice and get somebody in. And that's something that I learned again through my wellness journey and something that I knew, you know, there's a humility that comes with this, you know, with this line of work and with fitness as well, in that you don't have all of the answers yourself and you need to actually go and get your advisors and figure out what you can do. There are a lot of great options in Canada for people that are struggling with debt and to help them achieve, you know, a different path. And so it's a matter of getting the right advisor and somebody that you trust and moving forward on that path.
Mike, thank you for your time today.
Bruce, thank you for having me.
Bastante. Did I do okay on that? Bastante.
You did great.
Okay, good. Obrigado for your time.
The nada.
Good, good. Hey, Mike Braga, licensed insolvency trustee with BDO Canada, the host of Money Matters on Rogers Television. Coming up next on Moolala's Best of Financial Wellness, Shalicia Harris on the five pillars of financial well-being. And later, Money and the Single Person. Julie Shipley Strickland is going to talk about a book she co-authored called The Canadian's Guide to Personal Finance for Singles. There's lots more than a single episode out there of Moolala. In fact, we've done more than 200. So a way for you to go and focus on topics that are of particular interest to you is to go to our website. And if you go to moolala.ca, pull down the podcast navigation thingy-majiggy, there's a little search bar and you can search by guest name. If you've got someone in mind that we've talked to, you can search by their name. You can also search by topic. And of course, you can listen to the full show. Just a couple of options there. One other thing, listen, I've written a couple books, both of them Globe and Mail bestsellers. The first is called Moolala, Why Smart People Do Dumb Things with Their Money and What You Can Do About It. The second, focused on rocking your RRSP. They are available online. They are available on ebook. They are available through your local library. And my photo's holding up. I still do look as I did when that book was released not too long ago.
You're listening to Moolala, Money Made Simple, with Bruce Ellery on Canada Talks, Sirius XM 167.
Welcome back. Moolala, Money Made Simple is brought to you in part by Credit Canada. I am the CEO of the organization, and we are Canada's longest standing nonprofit credit counseling agency. Our mission is to help people get out of debt so they can get back into life. Listen, debt is a brutal reality for millions of Canadians. It starts to pile on for lots and lots of different reasons: job loss, divorce, illness, bad luck, you name it. Our accredited credit counselors are available to help you understand your current financial situation and take you through all your options on how to move forward. And there really are options out there. So go to creditcanada.com. We are nonprofit, as I said. The counseling is free and judgment free. Five key pillars of personal finance. That is what my next guest says. She says there are five key pillars. Shalicia Harris has created a platform called In Charge to help people use her five key pillars to get a better handle on their money. Hello there.
Hi, Bruce.
There are 923,000 books and blogs about personal finance already.
Yeah.
Why did you decide to start In Charge?
Because there was none that really suited what I was looking for and how I can prepare my life for the goals that I had for myself at the time. And In Charge came about when I was beginning to think about my own personal finance journey. I realized I thought I was doing all the right things that made sense to me, but it wasn't coming together in a holistic way where I could see the big picture. And that's where the five key pillars came from. And it looked at, you know, how I was managing my debt, how I can afford a house and what it means to have affordable housing. That's a hot topic these days. But, you know, then it went into how can I build financial resilience. And that's something that was really important to me, and credit worthiness. And obviously the hottest topic out there right now is investing. Mm.
There, you just went through your five pillars. I saw what you're doing there. Now, before we get to them, I want to ask, was there a moment? Mm-hmm. Was there a moment when this all came together? So when the movie is made of your life and of your success with In Charge, I don't know who you're going to have, you know, play you in the movie version, but I bet she's extraordinary, whoever she is. Was there a moment, or was it iterative? Did it gradually illuminate itself that there was more to be done? I'm hoping there was a moment like you, I don't know, broke down.
Absolutely. There was an absolute moment, and I remember it so vividly. I was working for a big multinational, and I had $100+ million budget. And I was sitting in my bed at 11 p.m. working through this budget and going, hey, why do I know where all of their money is going? And I have no idea where my money is going in totality. And that was the moment that said, hey, you have to do more. You have to dive in and you have to figure out how you're going to get to your goals sooner than later. And being someone that immigrated to Canada in my teens, it was something that my parents didn't have a background in, didn't really have like a network of folks to like say, you know, this is the guidance, this is what you need to do. And I just wasn't finding the right connection for me in the industry that made sense on the way I wanted to approach finance.
So pillar number one, debt management. Pillar two, housing affordability. That is not often phrased that way in a personal finance context. It is when you're talking about, you know, political or policy issues, and we know it's a massive problem. Why did you decide to phrase it that way for individuals?
Because I realized even when I was going through some of the decisions I was making and moving out and living in Mississauga and Toronto, I just didn't know how much I could truly afford and still pay the rest of my bills. And that became a really key aspect to understand what it means to live a fulfilling life and also not be house poor at the same time, which is just, you know, I still want to travel. I still want to do all these things. I still want to live in a nice place, but a nice enough place that also gives me and affords me the other things in life.
It's a huge challenge for really anyone who isn't currently a homeowner, regardless of age, but in particular, young people who are coming into the housing market where the average price is a ridiculous amount of money. Are you a homeowner?
Not as yet. But that's because I put it on hold to make sure other people can, you know, really build their financial foundation and dive a lot of my time and resources into this business.
Pillar three, resilience fund. Love it. Yes. Investing, number four, credit worthiness. And this pillar number five connects to number two, that you need a good credit score if you're going to get a mortgage.
Exactly.
What tips do you have for younger people on learning how to manage their credit report, their credit score?
My number one thing is credit worthiness is all about trust. And how you build trust with people is exactly how you build your credit worthiness. So if you are borrowing money and you want to make sure that person's going to lend you money again, hey, let's pay it back on time. Let's follow the terms that we've agreed to. And if we are paying only the minimum, let's still pay that on time, regardless of how much we can pay. So it's really about building trust and, you know, staying on top of things, making mindful decisions when it comes to obtaining debt and obtaining more credit. And that's how you build trust with anyone. And it's the same thing with your relationship when it comes to money and debt, particularly.
You work with humans. You work with people in, I'm sure, various circumstances at various life stages. Tell us about those engagements. What kind of conversations are you having, and how does that unfold for people?
So a lot of what I do is I focus on goals. What are people's goals? And then we start to break those down into what is your immediate thing that you want to address? And we look at it in terms of those five key pillars. Is your debt overwhelming you? Is your number one priority in buying a home? Are you really looking to invest your money and get into the investing market? And how can we take those goals and focus them and see how they impact, how this one pillar can impact the other pillars and create a plan that allows you to actually move forward with your own financial journey?
So many people want to be in the market, the crypto market, the cannabis market, the sport betting market, the whatever the market is. They love investing because it's super fun.
Yeah,
it can be super fun until you get your head handed to you on a platter. how do you counsel people to have their other pillars in order before they start, you know, taking options and going long and short and doing all those crazy things?
I think it's just about, you know, doing a little bit in these five key pillars that allow you to get to where you want. You can't build a foundation by only having, you know, just some cement or just having some water or, you know, having some dirt to put it all together. You have to bring in all the little things in each of the five key pillars. So if you have debt, you can still invest. If you want to buy a house, you still can have debt, but you need to be working towards paying it off. So what we are really trying to do is making sure that you can do little tiny things within your finances, within each of the five key pillars on a regular basis. So you really build that strong foundation, and then it allows you to focus on those more exciting things like investing in crypto and having more, you know, more of a threshold to be more risky, because the rest of your finances is in a really good spot and you can feel really comfortable doing that.
What is different for people who are, as you say, you're an immigrant, you are female, you are not 60 years old by any stretch? And I ask because we talk about gender and money, we talk about immigrant and money, we talk about visible minorities and money. What's your sense for the soupçon or the thing that differentiates that demographic from others that have been served to the nth degree for generations, and this demographic simply has not?
So with this demographic specifically is that their backgrounds come from very different financial systems and structures. So when you come into Canada, it's not really lending, you know, on your previous experience. It is really just building from the ground up and learning everything in a very new way because of the systems we have here in Canada. And what we allow people to do is really, you know, create a structure to show them these are all of the things that are going to matter to you in your finances, no matter what portion of life you're in. You can be 18, you can be 99 years old. And these five key pillars will still matter whether you want to purchase something big, you want to continue investing, you want to help your family or your children, or you just want to move forward in life yourself. And that's where I think serving these demographics specifically in a lot of different ways is really beneficial, because other demographics have that historical knowledge that can be passed on. But when you're net new to something, it can be very overwhelming to know even where you should start and what you should be looking forward to.
Shalicia, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much, Bruce.
Shalicia Harris is the founder of a platform called In Charge. And she was here today to talk about her take on the five key pillars to personal finance.
Hi, it's me, your dad. Look, we need to talk. This isn't working. The missed payments, the collection calls, and all those sleepless nights. We need nonprofit debt counseling, and I found the perfect place. Credit Canada Debt Solutions. They're non-judgmental, 100% confidential. They'll negotiate with creditors and even stop interest. Don't you want to rebuild your credit? You deserve better.
Break up with debt. Visit creditcanada.com.
Coming up later on Moolala, of course, it is our best of financial wellness show. And we're going to talk about financial wellness for singles. Julie Shipley Strickland talks about her book called The Canadian's Guide to Personal Finance for Singles. But first, what if you're not single? What if you're coupled? There is actually an app that focuses on helping couples manage their money together. It's called Capital. Its founders, Catherine Salisbury and George Freeman, will be here to talk about how it works. I am the money columnist for CBC Radio. I am also the money columnist for a daily lifestyle show called Cityline. So if you go to cityline.tv, you can find segments that I do, but also find other great segments on living a healthy, happy, full life. Tracy Moore is the host. She is the very BEST. So you can check out some of the stuff on Cityline as well.
You're listening to Moolah La, Money Made Simple with Bruce Ellery on Canada Talks, Sirius XM 167.
There are so many budgeting apps out there. I think there are probably more budgeting apps available than brands of shampoo. I don't know if I could quantify that, but there are a lot. And we talk about a lot of them on this show. One app, though, that we haven't talked about is called Capital. It has a feature where you and your partner can keep track of your finances together, so you're working towards shared spending and saving goals. And we're going to talk about how it works for a lot of couples in the real world and see how an app could make that work in the digital world for them as well. I am joined by Capital founders Catherine Salisbury and George Friedman. They are a couple, and they are joining us in Järva, Sweden. Hello there.
Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Catherine, let me start with you. You live in Sweden. Fantastic. Awesome. Tell us how Capital works.
Well, Capital is an app where you can do pretty much all of your planning. We think of everything from a goal. So do I want to go skiing? Do I want to retire? Do I have a tuition payment coming up in September? And so, for example, George and I will make those goals together. We can both see them. Then we can decide how we're going to save for them. Every time our paycheck hits, we each put 1% towards retirement or something like that. And then Capital will actually take that money and invest it for you, or we can put it into your spending account so that you can spend it on the things you want, and you can keep track of essentially your plan.
George, what was the insight that led you to this couple application? Because I said off the top, most of the apps are focused on individuals. You're a one human, it you know scrapes your one bank account, and yet a lot of people, practically, they have a spouse. Was there some blinding moment where you looked at Catherine and was like, we have to build this?
It's always been in the back of my mind since we started. So we launched Capital in 2015 and we passed 2 million users and saved well over $1 billion on the platform. We launched as a early test joint goals. So you can save towards, you know, your ski vacation or trip or furniture or refurb or whatever it is together. And then after about 2 years, you start to look at the course, look at the data of the joint savers, and they're way more successful, way more engaged. So we decided to take the entire platform to a joint solution. So that was the insight.
Capital is spelled Q-A-P-I-T-A-L. Its focus is on U.S. banks, and we're, you know, Canadian, but I thought the idea was so interesting that even if it's hard for people to use, they should know about it. A part of the couple dynamic, certainly in my marriage, is the conversations around the money. How do you think about enabling those conversations so the utility of this, you call it the dream team functionality, isn't limited to just the numbers?
The way we have set it up is we can actually communicate about our goals or our transactions or whatever it is inside the app. And we did that because we personally find it very irritating. I find it irritating if at the end of the day, I'm brushing my teeth and George says, "What was that big expense on Amazon?" So this way he can tag it in the app, kind of like a Google Doc experience, and put a question mark, and I can respond and say, "That was a gift for your mother," or something.
Can you, can George put on an emoji like a fiery devil? Can you?
I do that all the time. Yeah.
Oh, you do. And Catherine,
and I love not having to interrupt teeth brushing.
Right. Catherine, how does that go over when he puts on an emoji? Is that easy, or is that like, "I'm going to come and in real life club you"?
I don't love getting questioned on my spending. And we think that, so we were doing some studies, 80% of women do 80% of the spending. And when I say that, a lot of people chuckle and think, "Oh yeah, women are shopaholics" or something. And our theory is that's not it. We do the procurement in the household, you know, as we take big on difference. Different roles. Mm-hmm. I buy the diapers and the shampoo and things like that. So there are just tons of these spending moments. And I just don't love being checked in on that, on the specifics. And so this is a way to go back and forth without any love lost.
George, you're a part of this mini focus group because you are in this circumstance. What are the limitations of the technology? I mean, we joke about the emojis and all that, but where does the technology end and the relationship dynamic begin?
Yeah, it's a great question. I mean, we've come really far with our roadmap, but there's so much more work to do. And a key word for us is automation. We're really trying to build artificial intelligence to automate as much as humanly possible for you. So it's an autopilot for your money. Self-driving money is our vision. But we do a pretty good job splitting up your paycheck, getting you into long-term goals, short-term goals, spending accounts for discretionary spend and bills. Those four main buckets we're pretty good at, but there's way more that's happening throughout the month, decision-making wise, that we want to automate for you.
Catherine, how does the app guide you to make decisions that couples need to make? For example, what percentage of my income versus your income goes into the family pot? Some couples do it 50-50, even when there's income disparity. Some people have it be percentage-based. How does the app enable that sort of thing? Do they provide rules of thumb, or is it left up to the couple to figure it all out?
It's largely left up to the couple, but the way the tools we have in place is when you put the goals together, you know, when George and I sit down and say, "Here are the five things we want to be sure we can do this year, and here are the long-term goals, and here's how much money we need for it." Then when you start to, we have a product called Payday Divvy, so you can see our paycheck and we can say, "Okay, if we put this much in and this much in, you know, how much is left?" Before you know it, you realize that you're going to have to give and take if you want to meet the goals together. So it's more like a good therapist who asks you some questions and you answer for yourself, "Okay, I guess I'm going to have to cough up a bit more if we're going to get there."
Not every couple makes it. The, I don't know what the stats are in Sweden, but the stats in North America are not particularly encouraging. How do couples unwind from the dream team when their marriage no longer fits that phrase?
That's a great question. Technically, behind the scenes, everyone has their own bank accounts. These aren't joint accounts. So for example, if George and I are saving to take the family skiing, then the experience with capital is one goal, and we can see how much each of us has contributed and how much is in the pot. But behind the scenes, the amount I contributed is in my account and the amount George contributed is in his account.
Really interesting stuff. George, Catherine, thank you so much for joining us to talk about it today.
Thanks for having
us. Thanks for having us.
Catherine Salisbury and George Friedman are the founders of Capital. They joined us from Järva, Sweden, an interruption into their fantastic ski vacation to talk about their dream team tool. Coming up next on the best of financial wellness, we've got interviews that focus on many, many different topics today, including singles. Like the financial game for singles is simply different than it is if you're in a couple. Julie Shipley Strickland is going to talk about a book she's co-authored called The Canadian's Guide to Personal Finance for Singles. To stay up to date, singles, couples, whatever, you can sign up for our newsletter. Simple to do so at moolala.ca.
You're listening to Moolah La, Money Made Simple with Bruce Ellery on Canada Talks, Sirius XM 167.
The population of single Canadians is growing pretty fast, and there are lots of similarities to life as a single, lots of differences too, many differences when it comes to getting a handle on your money. If you're single, you don't have that partner to provide input when it comes to managing your finances. You also don't have to ask for permission or a big conversation if there's something that you want to splurge on. But we're going to get into this topic of money and singles with the author of a new book. Julie Shipley Strickland is a senior investment advisor at Wellington Altus. She is the co-author of The Canadian's Guide to Personal Finance for Singles. She is based in Calgary, Alberta. Hello there.
Hi, how are you?
I am well. Now, when you use this word single, it can refer to a lot of different life circumstances. How do you think about it in the context of the book?
Yeah. So when we were thinking about it for the context of the book, we really looked at three kind of broad categories. So one was divorced, two was bereaved, and then three was this category called chosen single. And so those are the three we really focused on and kind of had in the back of our minds when Brian and I were writing this book.
Now, in our pre-conversation, you told me you're actually married, happily married. Why did you decide?
So is Brian.
So is Brian, your co-author. Why did you decide to write a book with this particular focus?
You know, it's a growing segment of the population, just like you said, but there aren't many resources really targeted towards different ideas and different planning tips and tricks, information for this segment of the population to get the support they need. So that was one of the biggest reasons why, you know, we decided to target it.
What are some examples? If we were eavesdropping on the thoughts that single person has or the conversations they have with themselves, what would be some things that they would be dealing with, complaining about, challenged by?
Yeah, and great question. I think first and foremost, you targeted one very good point, is that they don't have to have any discussions, but they also don't get to have any discussions with a partner or someone to bounce ideas off of. So I think that's one area when, you know, you think about this segment of the market, that's an area where I think a lot of them struggle, for sure. It's hard, right? You're always in your own mind when you're making these decisions. Sure, you can bounce them off friends, colleagues, maybe some family, that sort of thing, but it's a different scenario. On the flip side, if you want to do something, whatever you want to do, it's your own decision. So I think that dynamic and how that plays out in someone's mind and in their decision-making process was definitely at the forefront when we were writing this book. The last one I wanted to touch on is always any sort of planning down the road. So any sort of tax planning, any sort of, you know, anything to do with planning for retirement, that sort of thing. It's very reliant on themselves. So I think we touch on that in different areas of the book because that seemed to be a big concern that we kept hearing about too.
I'm glad you put it into three separate categories of singles because I can imagine the challenges are quite different for someone who's chosen to be single. They may have, that may be their entire life. They're in that circumstance. Yes. For someone who's bereaved, they could have been married for decades and then be surprised to be in this circumstance. And for someone who's gone through a divorce, there's just a whole bunch of other financial and emotional complications. I want to ask you about that first category of the chosen single. Yeah. Did you put that out to those readers to say, what are we missing here? Did we accurately capture what you're really dealing with?
Yeah, that's really interesting. I don't think we polled anyone specifically. We did a lot of research. We did a lot of, asking in our own networks and that sort of thing. I wouldn't say we, polled any reader in our book or anything like that. I think what it was a lot of the research came in, had already all the evidence there of what this segment was kind of going through and where they needed support. And so that was one of the big areas, because it's actually one of the most rapidly growing segments of the population is people who have chosen to either identify as single and or reside as single and or that sort of thing. They're making their own independent financial decisions. That was kind of the definition we went by when we were thinking this through.
I was talking to a single person and she said, listen, I have finally had this insight, and she was in her mid-30s, that I have no one to rely on. If I don't figure this out, no one is going to take care of it for me.
Exactly. And on one hand, like you expressed, there's a freedom with that. I get to do what I'd like to do. That's fantastic. But on the other hand, there is no one to fall back on or to rely on. So it's imperative that they have the resources, the support, the network to be able to get the information they need and to be able to make educated decisions.
What are some of the nuances that you would need to apply as an investment advisor looking at some of the retirement calculations? I mean, I guess some of it's just the math. The math is the math is the math. But yeah, there isn't that backstop or security of another person who could step up if there was an income shortfall or something.
Yeah, I think there's a few areas I touch on when I'm planning for someone that's chosen single or someone perhaps that is now divorced and or bereaved. You know, these three, really, they're relying on themselves going into retirement or in retirement. And so one, we definitely lean into a bit more cash. So we have a bit more, and I don't mean necessarily cash deposits. I mean just liquid money that they can get access to, because you don't have that second person's pension or RIF or anything like that to be able to lean on. We need to have a bit more liquid assets available. So that's one area. Mm-hmm. Two, some of my clients really like the idea of having, some insurance in place. So insurance where there's some cash value, and that cash value is there. We affectionately say if they live too long, if they're running out of their traditional retirement assets, they're 90, 95, 100, that sort of thing, they have this next access of a pool of cash to be able to rely on and live off of. And if they don't need that, the death benefit when they do pass on goes to family and friends and that sort of thing. So some of my single clients really, really appreciate that, because they've got kind of, something if they're alive, and then something that passes nicely, to family and loved ones if they should pass or when they pass, right? So that seems to be kind of two areas that my singles really lean into. Yeah.
You are a female, your co-author is a male. How did you factor in gender? Because I can imagine on the chosen single part, there are some real differences there.
Yeah, that's a great question. I love that. I think for me, and I can only speak for me on this, although I want to attempt to, because Brian's so open and just lovely. For me, it was really, the statistics are showing that one, women outlive men. So you would have more traditionally in the bereaved category that say maybe have been widowed and lost their spouse. And then, because women are living longer, you may have more planning on the female side. So Brian and I discussed that. We really leaned into some of my knowledge and some of my experience there. And some of how I do tend to work with a lot of females, being female myself. And so I could really bring up real life concerns and experiences that I had and are currently having with some of my clientele. So that was definitely one area. And then I think Brian balanced that out well, when I would say, okay, well, as a female, this is what I'm thinking, this is what I would lean into. He's like, okay, this is the male perspective that I'd like to show. So we really, played off each other well. And I think there were, look, Brian's become a great friend. He's absolutely wonderful. So I think we were able to play off each other's experiences, knowledge, And it worked really, really well. I think we were able to capture both sides.
You called you referenced a chosen single. That chosen single yes. may have kids. That chosen Correct. Single may not have a kid. Let's look at Correct. That subgroup that doesn't. My mom has 5 kids. We're all around. We've all got tasks. We all engage with her in a very, very yeah. active way. I am coupled, but I only have 1 kid. So I can imagine yeah. that phase is different. How do you factor in the financial consequence for a chosen single who doesn't have a kid in terms of what care will look like? Because in all likelihood, they're going to have to pay out of pocket on the things that if you happen to have 5 kids, you don't have to pay for.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I think when we were looking at that area, you know, we were really looking at building up that reserve, what trusted friends, colleagues, siblings, even family members that, you know, I've got one client I'm thinking of, she's very close with her cousin who's about 5 years younger than her. So in her will and powers of attorney and that sort of thing, that cousin is going to speak for her. So, you know, there's other family relations or good friends, that sort of thing that can support that area for sure. And then I think it's just about really, you know, for them, it's very important to have their wishes outlined because there might be no one else that they've actually spoken to this about that can, you know, weigh in and give an opinion. Yeah. So that's definitely one area for sure. And then if we flip the other way, you know, when they pass away, who are they going to leave their funds and their estate and that sort of thing to? You know, some of my clients really like the idea of supporting charities. And so there's a lot of charitable giving that's being set up. Something they're passionate about, something they had the opportunity to volunteer in while they were alive, that sort of thing that they're really excited about. And so in terms of passing wealth on, I'm seeing a lot of exposure to charitable, you know, causes, and which is fantastic. And then often there's some compensation for a family or friend member that's going to be supporting them through that. Through the journey of passing and that sort of thing.
You write about unconventional housing arrangements, and I love that. I mean, we talk about this on the show. It's particularly yeah. relevant for people who are single because they don't have the inherent mm-hmm. support of a partner. Yeah. Tell us a bit about what you learned on that front and yeah. where we are headed, because I think there's a lot of work to be done in this country over the course of the next 20 or 30 or 40 years when I'm going to need a place to live that isn't where I currently live.
You know, there was a few ideas we came up with and that we researched and saw, but I think the most interesting was, you know, we had different words for it, but the description of it, I think, is the most articulate. Large home, several bedrooms in it, adjoining bathrooms renovated for that. And the people who are living in that home all either own it jointly or have some sort of arrangement of ownership over kind of their room. And then they share common space. And so, you know, an idea of a group home, but really for, let's say no one that's elderly or that sort of thing. They're active, they want to live, but they want that camaraderie, they want that community, and they don't want all the responsibilities of a home on one person. Right. So if there's 5 of them living in the home, maybe one is handling some of the cleaning, maybe one's handling some outdoor work, maybe one handles laundry, whatever their arrangement is. That one blew us away, I think, the most, because one, there's several being set up in different cities in Canada. So that was fascinating to us. And two, the report and the reactions to it were so positive and favorable. Mm-hmm. The instant community was probably the most talked about in our research that we found that we really loved. So yeah, I thought that was a very cool idea, something I hadn't thought of. It's like university all over again.
Yeah, yeah, minus the keg, or maybe including the keg.
Maybe including the keg.
Yeah, we need the keg.
It might have gone to nice bottles of wine, maybe yeah. some, we'll see, right? Yeah. There's lots of options there.
Let me ask you just one last question here. If you were to sum it all up, and I know the book's 192 pages, if you were to sum it all up into a single piece of advice for a human who is single, either always was or newly, what is the one thing that you would recommend they do or think about or prepare for when it comes to their money?
Read the book, and I'm going to put 2 ideas together. That's what I'm going to do on this one. Read the book and have an open mind. There's a lot of ideas that are in there that are very different and that we well researched. And I would say, like you said, at the beginning of becoming something new and how to operate. And I think it's really, really exciting.
Really interesting stuff. Julie, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you. Really appreciate it.
Julie Shipley Strickland is the co-author of The Canadian's Guide to Personal Finance for Singles. That's it for this best of episode. Today, we're focused on financial wellness, many, many different topics. And we've got many, many more hundreds of interviews that you can check out if you go to moolala.ca. But thank you so much for tuning in to this conversation. Our sponsor is Credit Canada, the first and longest standing nonprofit credit counseling agency in the country. So a shout out to them. Also, a note, if you'd like to reach us for any reason, ask@moolala.ca is the email address. You can send us your feedback, your questions, your comments, whatever it is, and we promise we'll get back to you. On social media, I'm at Bruce Selry on Twitter, Bruce Selry Moolala on Facebook, and yes, yes, I know, I should be on Instagram, I know, I should be on TikTok, one day maybe. Thank you for listening, and have a great day.